Okay, well, hi everybody, and welcome back to our Rays and Initiations webinar commentaries. Well, I wish it were possible to really do justice to this magnificent work from the Tibetan, the summary of the treatise on the Seven Rays, the synthesis of it, the climax of it, and a book for the future. You know, I'm always amused, and I've said it before, when people come along and say, okay, well, that was the Tibetan, but now here are these new teachings, and the Tibetan is now superseded in what he has given. Excuse me. To humanity, but you know, these are the ancient 14 rules for disciples and initiates. Nowhere among normal human beings, disciples and probationary initiates, nowhere fulfilled. So everyone can make up their mind whether they want to accept some kind of channeling from some great soul or angel named X, or whether they want to tread the reliable way according to the permission given by the great lords Kutumi, the Christ, Sanakumara, for the Tibetan to give what he has given. And notice, he always has to ask permission when it comes to these borderline areas where he might say more, but permission from the higher ups will either be granted or not granted. Well, in any case, we will move on. DK has been speaking a lot about conflict, you know, the problem. Well, let's see, how does he call it? Does he call it a problem? Or does he call it the crisis? I seem to have forgotten the major word here, but it is, okay, the principle, that's it. Well, principles cause problems, but it's the principle of conflict, the principle of decision, with the principle of refusal. And he has talked about, you know, we've been through it here a little bit and we'll be through it more in the future. Why the principle of conflict is so greatly increased because of the opposing ideologies brought on by the increasing intelligence along the fifth ray of humanity. The awakening of humanity to better understanding. See, some of these are on the positive, some on the negative side. The growth of goodwill, by which we recognize that which is not goodwill. The partial sealing of the door where evil dwells, motivating some people to really work forward for humanity, but motivating others still under the impress of evil to work against it. The use of the great invocation, I think that's very powerful. The most effective instrument we have for bringing about the right timing or preparing humanity for the right timing of the reappearance of the Christ. The gradual approach of hierarchy, putting a lot of pressure on us as souls and hence as personalities, and the imminent return of the Christ, drawing ever nearer as he pervades the mental, astral and etheric planes and gets ready for his precipitation, not as some person to be born somewhere, but in his Maya Virupa. So all of these things intensify the conflict through which we are living, but the good thing about the conflict is it gives us a chance to really cognize and understand the difference between different directions. Remember, here on this planet, We as graduates will be called adjudicators between the pairs of opposites. And the fourth ray is going to dramatize the interplay between these pairs of opposites. Until finally, under the law of magnetic control, the soul really wins the day. But then, of course, the conflict will continue as ever higher aspects along the emanative path are added to the one who is reascending along the path on which he or she descended. So everywhere, there is conflict everywhere, and that's sort of the first effect we should expect from the fourth ray, but as it comes into power from its monadic aspect, whatever that really means, some things it could mean, of course, because we all have all seven types of monads, at least secondarily. But many souls along the fourth ray line are expected. The question is how many monads along the fourth ray line are expected regardless of their soul ray. That's a question I can't answer, but it is something that can be put forward. Well, anyway, this conflict has engulfed us all. It's still producing, he says, physical conflict, emotional strain. Whenever there's a pulling between differing points of tension, there's strain, you know, strain on the material, strain on the consciousness which unites these opposite poles. Tremendous mental issues of decision, no doubt, and which will greatly lessen when the masses of people everywhere are convinced that right human relations are of far greater importance than greed, human pride, territorial grabbing, and material possessions. And you can see, you know, this is what the Nazis did, and many are the leaders who operate even today in the same way. Maybe even if by more subtle means, using economics and threats and some sort of hegemony and a kind of insistence that threatens the smaller, weaker parties. Anyway, moving on here in number 83, and I'm sorry that I had to abbreviate the last session. Sometimes things just come up and you can't continue, and rather than leave it on the webinar, leave the webinar going, which could have untoward results, you know, I thought it best to just curtail it at the half-hour point and then get on with this very large subject, the effect of the energy of harmony through conflict upon humanity as a whole. He told us he'd do this for the individual, for humanity as a whole, and examining the ray in general and its place in the development of modern civilization and planetary process. It would be obvious, says the Tibetan, that this ray energy embodying, and I want to say, at first, the principle of conflict has a unique and curious effect upon relationships. You know, usually we consider two factors involved in relationships, but of course, there can be more. This is due to the interrelation of this ray of harmony through conflict and the second ray of love wisdom. Remember how he said two ones are two, two twos are four, two threes are sixes. This tells us that something special, exists between these particular rays and their combinations. Ray five is out of the picture, and so was Ray 7. Interestingly, how they do relate to each other in relation to Uranus and in the coming age. I remember a chart from DK where we had 7 listed here, but over here only 5, and the 1 began parallel to the 3, the beginning of Brahma. Thus, 2 was parallel to 4, and 3 was parallel to 5, and 4 was parallel to 6, and 5 was parallel to 7. That gives us some insight about special connections. So the ray of love wisdom and the fourth ray have this intimate relationship. And, you know, there are souls upon the fourth ray who do transfer to the second ray, but there are some who remain and do not transfer. And they have a different fate and different destiny. The second ray is primarily the ray of right human relations. And this is something, interestingly, which is promoted in Shambhala, though it is a first ray center, promoted now in Shambhala, as far as the fourth kingdom in nature is concerned. So, you know, when we begin to achieve, let's just say that this way, the harmony of the higher part of the fourth ray is directly related to right human relations. The energy of love governs all relations between souls and controls the hierarchy, the kingdom of souls. Not yet does it govern all relations between personalities. I guess if we could all learn what it means to really function as a soul, relations on our planet in the human kingdom would appear dramatically, and that's why this type of teaching is so very important, that we take our place as a soul and not just as a personality, and then relate in a new way, which is under the Christ consciousness, the soul consciousness. The energy of wisdom should govern all relations within the fourth kingdom, the human. Well, love and wisdom, if the teaching of the Buddha, okay, how about that for Buddha? B-D-H, well, that's Buddhic. So how about B-D? And Buddha, B-D-A. Okay, I've got it already. Don't need it. The energy of the Buddha prevailed, because he is the Lord of wisdom and the Lord of light. And someday it will inevitably do so, because after all, there's a lot about wisdom connected with Mercury, and Mercury is the ruler of the Buddhic plane, whereon the human monads primarily at this time express, at least in the worlds above the lower 18 or 21 subplanes. So Mercury is the lord of mind wisdom and very connected with the Buddha, and Venus, a lord of love wisdom. So the mind wisdom is coming for us inevitably. Hence the emphasis laid upon the need for soul-infused personalities in the world today. And, you know, this we must explain and promote as promulgated by all true esoteric schools. And, you know, the test, of course, is group consciousness. Group consciousness and unselfishness. So let me do a little bit of GR, group consciousness. Well, I could even do group conscious there, couldn't I? But anyway, let's call this group consciousness. And I'll do GRCON for group conscious. Okay. So love is coming. Wisdom is coming. And this is the way we will live after having gone through the horror of that which glamour and illusion produce, you know, the real hell on earth of this kind of blurred vision and divisiveness and fragmentation and irresolution and a condition banished from the great unity. Well, you know, later we'll look down and we'll see what we've been through and perhaps breathe a sigh of relief, but then you think about it, how many universes have elapsed already? You can't give a definite number because it's been infinitudinous. So although the theme of every universe, the algorithm may be different due to the principle of unrepeatability, we are somewhat familiar with being buried in self-imposed limitation and working our way out of it. Remember, any action is less than absolute infinitude. You can't have an action which increases absolute infinitude. If you have a finite action, it is virtually an infinite decrease. But it seems to be the game we are playing for reasons we will understand more as time progresses. Every once in a while, a little philosophy thrown in, even though it seems rather far-fetched to some. It might be said that the effect of the principle of conflict operating under Ray 2 and controlled by operating under Ray 4, controlled by Ray 2 for a unitive outcome will be, as far as humanity is concerned, to bring about right human relations and the growth of the universal, that's an Aquarian word, universal spirit of goodwill among men to be expected in the last decan of Aquarius. Well, you know, not completely, because excuse me, there are still so many human beings that, you know, are not yet on the path and have much to do to find their way onto the path of spirituality. So we cannot expect universal goodwill from such, but it will be sufficiently universal as to make a huge difference in the general human response and in the general types of relations that human beings have with each other. Only the most benighted and uncouth of thinkers would fail to see that these two results of the conflict, right human relations and a universal spirit of goodwill, those are the two results. Okay, and we'll say so. Two results. Only such. Yeah, the word uncouth is not often used, but here it is. The most benighted and uncouth of thinkers would fail to see that these two results of conflict engendered at this time are the two most desirable factors for which all men of goodwill should be working. All men and women of goodwill should be working. I'm going to make this even bigger because it's so important. To bring about right human relations and the growth of the universal spirit of goodwill. What a difference, what a change it would make in our, in the way we treat each other, what a different world it would be. We have a lot of systems of thought that condition the minds of people, which actually work against these desirable outcomes. Don't take this person for your friend because he believes differently than you. express goodwill only to those who concretely believe as you do and follow the one true religion given for all eternity, for all the universe, etc., etc., and such nonsense. So we have to cure the extremely limiting concrete-mindedness of certain religious and philosophical systems which guide human thinking, or maybe I should just say human desire even more than human thinking, because I'm not sure how much thinking goes into it. These concrete-minded selfish systems need to be antidoted. And of course, in the ageless wisdom, we do have the antidote. These are our objectives. Our objectives, right human relations and universal goodwill. The inflow of energy into humanity this time is all in favor of such efforts, and the principle of conflict has worked so effectively that men are desiring harmony, peace, and equilibrium. Subjection to constant conflict has taught humanity what it does not want. Peace, equilibrium, right adjustment to life along harmonic lines and circumstances, and right and balanced human relationships. Sometimes the work of Pluto gets involved there. And I think I can do it this way. PL. Oh, that's planetary logos. Let's do PLU. And then PLU. And that's a bit more like our friend Pluto that makes it so bad that seeing the hell of it, we want something better. It's opposite. So sometimes, as Master Moria has sometimes said, the worse, the better. Hard to fathom, but it brings us into confrontation with the undesirable more quickly so we can decide more effectively, decisively, what would be more desirable. Okay. In every country and among all types of men, sincerely or insincerely, the talk of the newspapers, on the radio, and upon the lecture platforms is on behalf of harmony and a widespread recognition of needed adjustment, and we might say even more so today. Well, at least let's put it like this. Our media is greatly expanded, and our information. Our information flow is overwhelming. Matter of fact, it's almost a disease causing. People can get so overstimulated by the constant input of information that they begin to lose their center and become overcome by it. And the good forces can use this, or the evil forces can use it. Even the evil forces, which still remain active, hide their greedy purposes behind a spurious desire for world unity, world harmony, and right human relations. Well, they can't speak out so boldly because human desire has shifted more towards the desirable. So, but these are very crafty powers. A lot of third ray, a lot of strategy, a lot of manipulation and understanding. How to sway the desires of human beings and also their minds. And that, excuse me, that of course is demagoguery, of which we have lately seen a lot. This is the year 2017. Who knows what the outcome will be, but the United States is being, and hence the world, sorely tested in terms of the effectiveness of demagoguery, appealing to the lowest, the basest, the elemental nature of man rather than his higher angels. If you think about it, Abraham Lincoln calling for appeal, the invocation of our higher angels. Just imagine certain people in power today calling for such things. There's no insufficient, there's insufficient spiritual depth to do that. The masses of the people in all lands have been convinced by the evidence made possible by the principle of conflict that basic changes in man's attitude and goals must be sought, brought about, if humanity is to survive, you know, let's say in an atomic era. So it's not just talk. This is real. But they are, in their own way, wisely or unwisely, seeking a solution. And basically he's saying the Great War was convincing that a better way must be found. Now, you know, some of us, we were only children during the conclusion of the Great War in the 1940s. We probably didn't live through that aspect of it, unless we were, you know, incarnated for World War I, which is certainly certainly possible. But that attitude of being convinced that the better way must be found seems to be generally prevalent among humanity, except when they are, well, misled by false philosophical and religious systems, and by ignorance and lack of learning and lack of expansive mind, which gives you many things to compare to each other. But in general, the healthy human attitude is towards seeking a new, better, and improved way for everybody, unless, of course, you're so captivated by, well, Darwinian economics and a greed which masquerades itself by invoking principles which should not be applied to the social condition, the economic survival of the fittest. Actually, it's a lie. I mean, societies tend to survive when the members support each other, and not when they are in a cutthroat manner trying to get everything they can at the expense of others. The war has produced much good in spite of the destruction of forms, you know. Now we remember that the whole universe can be wiped away and everything remains untouched, immutably the same. God is as ever, and all forms, all perceptions fade away in the Mahapralaya, and we are left with the absolute infinitude of absolute deity. But those are hard things to think about when you're being extremely challenged in life and limb and soul. Your consciousness is racked by fear and uncertainty and all the things which attachment causes, and the inability to voluntarily exit the horrible scene prevails. You know, I'm reminded, what was it, that story of Apollonius of Tyana? You know, maybe he was informed by the high initiate Jesus at the time, but, you know, they didn't like what he was saying in a certain court, and they came at him, you know, to grab him and throw him into prison or to kill him. And he said, just disappeared in their midst. So this is the control of light. But the average human being doesn't have that kind of siddhic, S-I-D-D-H-I-C, what is it, such a word, siddhic control, or control of the cities, and has to suffer the consequences in the world of illusion. He can't just extricate himself through some higher city, so he's in apparent danger, whereas the master, long ago, having achieved sort of a neutrality and non-attachment to these apparently deadly circumstances, has earned the cities, which simply allow him to deflect. It's the same story about Tibet. The Chinese soldiers would be firing at these Tibetan masters, whatever. They just disappeared in front of them, you know. Not all, of course. There was great bloodshed, and it would depend upon one's degree, established powers. But usually we don't get those powers unless we proved our non-attachment to the circumstances from which the powers can easily relieve us. So the war has produced much good in spite of the destruction of forms. The causes of war are better understood. They are mental causes and not just greed and rapacity, you know, as in the old Atlantean desire days. The issues involved are slowly being clarified. Information about all nations, even when incorrectly presented, has awakened mankind to the fact of the one world. And I must say, you know, by all means, read the, I remember when Mary Bailey corrected me, I said Destiny of the Nations, and she said, no, the Destiny of the Nations. Okay, she was a stickler for doing things correctly. So one learns. But to read this wonderful book, which offers the soul ray and soul signs and excuse me, personality ray and personality signs of so many, at that time, significant nations, and hints about many, many others. If not the full explanation of ray and sign, then usually at least ray or sign, something of that nature. So, the community of pain, sorrow, anxiety, starvation, and despair have brought all men closer together. You know, there is the community of Christ's sufferings. Well, this is just the community of suffering, but there's also the community of Christ's sufferings or sorrows. And this relation is a far greater breeder of harmony than man realizes. You know, we often say misery loves company. But in that company of the miserable, some harmony is found. So, you know, we've been through it. Oh, I know what you've been through. I've been through the same. There's this fellowship of shared sufferings. Let's call it that. Shared. And, of course, we will all of us experience the shared sufferings of the Christ as we move forward on the path which he has indicated. We're not there yet, nor is our heart sensitive enough yet to be full members of the fellowship of Christ's sorrows or sufferings, but it's coming. The world of men today is more closely knit. Subjectively, in spite of all outer cleavages and conflicts, than ever before in human history. You know, maybe the commonality of being human is hitting home. And we know, you know, that people will speak a different language and look different than we do and have different customs and all that, but you say, after all, you know, getting to the root of it, they are human beings, the same as we are. I'm reminded of a monologue in The Merchant of Venice by Shakespeare. And basically, Shylock, who is maybe not such a sympathetic character, but he's you know, he's being judged as a Jew, and there are all kinds of prejudices heaped upon him, and he says, you know, he pleads for the common humanity shared by the Jew and all other human beings. Maybe you know that one, but, you know, hath not a Jew eyes, hath not a Jew hands, does not a Jew bleed? You know, he goes through the list of that which common, which all human beings experience. And this is his attempt to establish some sort of realized equality and not just the prejudice heaped upon him and others like him, a kind of demonization. So we have to be really careful about how we demonize people who hold points of view and do certain things that are very, very different and from what we would do or what we would think or even anathema to us, just horrific. But we have to remember always our common humanity. So what has developed here, there was a firmer determination to establish right human relations. It was so clear after the war, you know. We swept the house clean. How many devils were there? I remember, was it 20? Was it 40? The man swept the house clean, but then didn't pay attention. Relaxed. Watch the second blow, says Master Moria. Watch for the second blow. After you defeat the enemy and neutralize his first blow, you relax, and then the second blow gets you. Watch for the second blow, and the house may have been filled then with many more devils, many more, through our negligence and through our lack of vigilance. Nevertheless, there is, says the Tibetan, as a general assessment after the war, a firmer determination to establish right human relations and a clearer perception of the factors involved. I think in Costa Rica, is it a university of peace in Costa Rica? Robert Mueller, wonderful man, was he? Well, he was high ranking in the United Nations. I forget his exact title, and he was always a speaker at the Arcane School work. Wonderful man, and somehow filled with this radiation that you could really know he was a real human being. And he started this Peace University, University of Peace in Costa Rica. It wouldn't be possible if there had not been this firmer determination to establish right human relations. And then, of course, understanding that peace is not just the cessation of conflict. It is built in so many ways, physically, psychologically, mentally. It is built, and you have to know then what are the factors involved in building the peace. We can put it down. Are the factors involved in building the peace? So it takes real study in economics and psychology, even philosophy and certainly science. You know, this is not a simple matter of let's put down our guns and everything will be fine. The new principle of sharing inherent in the second ray of love wisdom, which is concerned so fundamentally with relationships, is gaining ground, and its potency is being released by the activity of the fourth ray of harmony through conflict. Achieve harmony, and thence pass through the door into right human relations, sustained by love and goodwill. Well, these sound like great ideals, and you know, I know for how long that I've been in this incarnation, people have been talking about this kind of thing. I can't spell the word harmony. Well, for a fourth-rate type, that's pretty bad. That's terrible. Well, here we go. So, principle of sharing inherent in the second ray of love, wisdom, the principle of sharing. Which means, of course, that we have a sense of an adjusted sense of right proportion, a degree of humility about ourselves, and understanding the role we play and the role other people play, and the determination that people will have what it takes for them to take their next real step forward, not just their glamorous, imagined, you know, step forward. We have many people desiring this or that for their lower egoic self, but their real step forward, and have enough to fulfill that or to gain the education required to know even what that is. So all of this is gaining ground. I wonder what the Tibetan would say right now. They see so much more clearly than we do. And where we may see a huge uprising of all kinds of difficulties, that kind of uprising can be the elevation of these difficulties into our field of vision, so we see what they are and can choose to reject them, to detach, to be rid of them. As in psychology, if you don't see what's really causing the problem in your psyche, you can't do anything about it. Same for humanity. It's all got to come up in our face. And we see the horrible things that have been long suppressed, much done, but long suppressed, the vision of them long suppressed, so that we have not acknowledged the terrible things that are done. Then at last, under Pluto, we see, and we decide, you know, we won't have any more of this. The principle of sharing, though still divorced from any official sanction, meaning approval in this case, is under consideration and will someday be the governing factor in the economic life of the world. Well, okay, we're told that unless some degree of sharing occurs, we don't know how much, but at least that it's a major factor in considering the relationship between people and nations, the Christ cannot return. So, you know, when is that return? Well, we're told not to worry about the day and the hour, but when certain conditions are fulfilled and the Christ and his closest associates know what they are, then the inevitable return will occur. So this principle of sharing, though still divorced from the approval of the many and the approval of many nations, will one day, someday, be the governing factor in the economic life of the world. Now, maybe it doesn't have to go that far for the Christ to return, because when he does return, he will motivate people to make it so. But some degree of sharing and peace, some degree, we don't know the degree, but some degree, and the cleaning of the church and the esoteric and philosophical groups and so forth. The house cleaning, general house cleaning, has to be there before he can show up. Otherwise, it would be a disaster. Release that kind of energy that he has into such a fragmented, antagonistic world. And I'm sure he knows how much trouble it could cause. I'm reminded of the idea that when you release the hierarchical energy into someone of an ordinary state of mind, it can freeze them in their tracks. For a disciple, they might, you know, disciples might be able to use it and advance. But Master Hilarion said something to this effect. He says, don't put a dirty foot on the electric ladder of ascent. This is, you know, my own kind of paraphrasing. But if you've got a muddy foot, don't put it on the electric ladder. Because the ladder, the current in the ladder will freeze the mud, and you will be stuck exactly there in that realm. So we have to clean our feet. And of course, in Pisces, the Christ did wash the feet of his disciples. It demonstrated humility, but it also demonstrated the way to tread the path. So this principle of sharing, you know, so important, vitally important. And it's not just a physical thing. There's all kinds of ways you can share. Every one of the vehicles, especially when it has some degree of soul infusion in it, invites the possibility of sharing some good with one's neighbor. So, regulated and controlled by those men who are alert to human need upon the physical plane. So, this is the group of first degree initiates who are on the seventh ray. The economic matters, which is so important to humanity, will be rightly handled, he tells us, in the future by a group of initiates who are on the seventh ray. First degree initiates. It being a ray, of course, of economics, and the Master R, you know, being a seventh ray soul and a third ray monad, is trying to reorganize, especially Europe and especially the United States, in terms of new economic attitudes. The principle of conflict is also active in all institutions, groups, and organizations in all lands and in every department of human thought. So let's just think of it this way. Conflict can clarify. That is what it is meant to do, as well as be decisive in favor of the higher of the conflicting forces, as well as to be decisive in favor of the higher of the conflicting forces or energies. Oh, AWA going AWOL, AWA, some of these things really bridging phrases, but they abbreviations can help, as well as. All right. We're kind of, you know, I guess maybe taking our time here as we go through this. Its results are first the awakening of humanity to certain major developments and possibilities. So the principle of conflict awakens POC. Whoop. I always sacrifice my red bracket when I do a new word. Excuse me. The POC. Oh, come on. Can't believe that. Yes, okay. Now it should work. The POC awakens. And secondly, it will lead to certain basic renunciations once the issues are clearly seen and the cleavage which exists in reality between the desirable spiritual values and the undesirable spiritual values has been made clear. Okay, renunciation through realized clarity. And that's why the Black Lodge and those lords of form, they seek to confuse, they seek to glamorize, they seek to blind our sight to the real issues. They seek to conceal themselves so that what they're doing cannot be seen and only the effects be experienced. We have to bring things into the light. Rather, and when we lie about things, you know, as is so prevalent today in government and economics and so forth, we just cover up the truth and delay the day of realization. In politics, for instance, the two-party system is based upon a correct premise, but it is not at present a satisfactory system because of, human stupidity. Well, he might as well be describing the recent American election. Well, maybe we aren't supposed to say things like that, but certainly if we don't have an informed, educated electorate, then we cannot discriminate between the higher and the lower pairs of opposites, and our decisions will be made purely on the basis of elemental satisfaction, the desires and tendencies of the lower lunar lives. And I guess that's what he means by human stupidity. We do have, I don't want to speak too much from the American point of view. I am here in Finland, as a permanent resident, but still an American citizen. We have the blue and the red. Well, the blue is Jupiter, and the red, in this case, is Mars. And so, which would you prefer? The great synthetic, inclusive, sacred planet, akin to our sun. Maybe just a little bit more mass, and Jupiter would have been a star too. Or the non-sacred red planet Mars. Here it doesn't mean, just the first ray. It means the non-sacred planet. Which would you prefer? So when you look at it, already the hierarchicalization of a two-party system, each with its faults, of course, is already being presented to us in the blue and the red. Interesting how the Civil War was fought on the basis of colors, the blue and the gray. Well, the blue obviously was the North, and though, the sins were many and all that, it was on the side of progress. Whereas the gray, ambivalent, and the darkening of the white, So the gray did not stand rightly for the principles of progress, emancipation, equality, freedom. The color told the story. It stands in truth for the reactionary groups in any land, and also for the Progressive Party who are alert to new possibilities. Well, I certainly am not confused by that. I can see how that's working out in the Geminian dualistic two-party system, which the United States, particularly with its Gemini personality, espouses. One party aims at the holding back of the life of the spirit, at clarifying by obstruction, and at holding back to preventing the too rapid rushing forward of the impatient and the immature. Well, there's some good features. It's true conservatism, not reactionary attitude, which reacts against progress all the time. Well, there's some good in this. It's not good to hold back the life of the spirit, but it is good that obstruction clarify. And it is a fourth-rate thing not to rush prematurely, impatiently, into new possibilities while throwing away the values of the old. So that's how he tells us the fourth ray works. Excuse me. He tells us the fourth ray works in that way that makes sure that no excessive cleavage appears between the old and established and the new and possible. The Progressive Party should be composed of those who are aware of the unneeded and old issues, not necessarily bad, but unneeded, and who pioneer all the time, even though frequently without much skill in action. I'm reminded of Moria talking about the ragtag progressive, something like that. Ragtag, young, progressive people with no real skill, but with right motivation. Such a clear line of demarcation between the two basic world parties, not just the US, but something that is present in many countries, usually with the reactionary qualities involving the most concrete rays, and the progressive parties more the abstract rays of aspect. And in our country, in the U.S., it's the sixth ray and the second ray, obviously. Such a clear line of demarcation between the two basic world parties is not yet possible, nor are the spiritual values of either group appreciated by the unthinking masses. You know, each group has its sins, if I may, and its inadequacies. Adequacies. Okay. Today, party politics are as selfish and therefore as reactionary as are the masses of men. And, you know, even in the so-called progressive group, obviously there has to be true progress is a must. But, you know, there's much progressivism that brings with it that which is not truly progressive. The real good of humanity is not the goal of the average politician in either group, for usually only his own selfish ambition and the desire to preserve a certain political ideology which has put him into power are the goal of his efforts. Well, quite amazing how this is playing out today, for sure. We see it so clearly, and the next number of years in the era of the forerunner will give us some kind of decision which indicates whether humanity will really go forward as it is expected to do, as is desirable, or whether there will be that delay about which the Tibetan warns, and he says it is a possibility which can be clearly visioned, you know. So it is certainly imminent. I remember when he talked about the latent fascism of the United States. And lo and behold, the fascism has arisen and even, you know, on the verge of making big changes in a negative way, it has taken power. But I do believe, you know, speaking from the midst of all this right now, 2017, that the United States established values will be strong enough to contradict the very thing that ended the Republic of Rome, the emergence of the emperors, the dictators, and so forth, and other places where people seized power and took it away, actually, from the people. Well, we seem to be getting there in terms of this program, maybe a little more. The principle of conflict is working also in the churches. Oh my goodness, yes. But more slowly, unfortunately, owing to the corruption and soporific defect of theological churchianity. Believe and you shall be saved. Is it faith or works or both? Well, you know, the debate has raged. Are you saved by faith alone, regardless of your works? Are you saved by works? And if you don't have faith, you're not saved. Or are you saved by both? So you can have the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen, in faith, in light, to be applied in work. But, you know, it can put those in expectation of their salvation, their assured salvation, to sleep. What more have they to do? They're going to heaven forever and everything will be great. You don't have to work very hard and you go to sleep in terms of your consciousness and your spirit. I would have you note my choice of words. I say not of Christianity, for true Christianity as Christ taught it is free from theological abuses and must and will be restored, or perhaps more accurately, reach its first stage of expression. Long wait, hasn't it been, you know? Long wait for 2,000 years. Of course, some churchmen have absolutely expressed that, but we're talking about the general mass expression which has been captivated by the dead Christ who has risen and promises that your corrupt body will rise on the judgment day and all the rest of the nonsense involved there. But it is firmly believed by the concrete mind, unschooled by the more subtle Eastern teaching, which it fails to understand and concretizes into a kind of idolatry. Well, anyway, we are reaching, this is the end of, what have I got here? End of Raised and Initiation Webinar Commentary, number 83. This time it actually is a full hour, more or less. And we started off on page whatever, and we went to 614. And this is the beginning of Raised and Initiation Webinar Commentary, number 84, pages 614. We don't have the date on that yet, but let's just say this is the 6th of March, 2017. And I always go on this hunt, and I'm so sorry that I seem to forget where I belong. 611 to 614. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. 611. Well, two or three pages, sometimes four, seems to be what we're doing, because I'm allowing myself to comment fairly liberally, to give threads of connection and association with what the Tibetan has said. Obviously, you want to study him as he said it. And then if you want to go, you know, I won't say beyond, but if you want to do something additional, you can study the lines of connection that I am suggesting, and perhaps it will help pull the whole picture together. All right, friends, so until we start with Raised and Initiations number, there we go, 84, we have plenty to study along the way. So thank you for being here. Thank you for studying along with me. Believe me, as I do these things, I am studying. This is my study. You know, time being what it is, available as it might be, I kind of do two things at once. I study and share at the same time. So hopefully you're getting something out of it, and it takes a long time to make a Master DK, some thousands of years of real study. So if you're that way inclined, let's really get with it. See you soon, and bye-bye, and thank you for everything. Bye-bye.